Today's program is brought to you by CloudRide, the first vape juice with flavors created by a James Beard award-winning chef. For more information, visit cloudridevapor.com.
Hi, this is Celia Kutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
The Speakeasy is produced by Heritage Radio Network, a nonprofit, member-supported radio station devoted to all things food and drinks, especially drinks. On a day like today, right? help keep HRN alive by becoming a member today. Go to heritageradionetwork.org and click on the beating heart. And we will pour you a whiskey next time when we see you. All right.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte.
My name is Souther Teague.
And in the studio today, well, we've already had a lot of fun even before we got started today. But we have our buddy in...
All the way from Kansas City.
And he's got to get on a flight after the show. So we had to have all of our fun before the show and on the show.
But it's not over yet.
It's not over yet.
Just
we have Ryan Mabee from Kansas City. Today, I mean, guy, you do a lot out there. You've got bars and restaurants, and like you've got what we're going to be talking about today. Mostly is
about some whiskey.
We're going to be talking about some whiskey. So welcome to the show, man.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
So how old is the J. Rieger Distillery?
It depends on if you look at it from a modern perspective or historical, because it was founded in 1887. So what's that, 130 years? Almost 129 years?
Don't ask me about math right now.
So we're going to we'll be 130 years old next year. But
that's great.
Like a lot of distilleries back then, they went out of business. They succumbed to prohibition. And myself and the great-great-great-grandson of the founder, his name is Andy Rieger. We partnered to resurrect it from the dead about 2 years ago. So we brought it back in 2014.
That's awesome, man.
That's great.
With so much American history, well, world history in distilleries and breweries, it's always good to hear. You don't hear a lot of these stories, but it's always good to hear a story of resurrection of a classic distillery. Especially from where you and I are from.
It's,
you know,
really exciting. I mean, I've lived my entire life in Kansas City. I was born and raised there, and I absolutely love it.
We're state neighbors.
Right. It's awesome. But I had no idea until just 6 years ago when I was opening my restaurant that this distillery even existed. Nobody knew. It wasn't like this commonly told legend of, oh, this old distillery. But they were huge. I mean, they were a massive distillery. They had over 100 products. They had over 250,000 unique customers that they were able to track, that they sold and shipped products to all over the country. It was a very big company.
It was like a Hiram Walker sized.
Yeah.
Kind of,
yeah. They actually, they claimed back in the early 1900s that they were the largest wholesale mail order distributor of whiskey in the country.
Jesus.
And these guys just disappeared after Prohibition.
Disappeared, just like so many others. I mean, there's probably others out there we don't even know about.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, vaporized.
Yeah, totally. In thin air. Yeah, man. Just from, especially you're saying mail order, I mean, it makes a lot of sense. It's centrally located in the United States.
Yeah.
So
the Pony Express was founded in St. Joseph, Missouri, which is about an hour north of KC. So I'm guessing that most of the whiskey that was shipped was Pony Express, if you can imagine that.
That's awesome.
Wow.
That's
crazy.
We should revive that part.
Absolutely.
Oh, my God.
let me convince my business partner, Andy. Let's bring back horses and delivery.
I wonder what the insurance would be like on that.
I mean, surely you had to not dilute at all, so it could be less weight on the horses.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's really cool. Like, I've done a lot of digging into the historical aspect of the business, and I have a ton of old order forms and advertisements dating back to the early 1890s, and it was amazing, like, how they marketed their brand back then. And basically they just sent out what would have been considered like spam of today,
like a mailer.
Yeah, like a mailer, where you would say it would have an advertisement, like an image of the bottle that was like drawn, you know, and it would say order a gallon of Rieger's Monogram whiskey and get a free pint along with it, all for $2.99, and people would like put
outrageous
cash in it, right? People would put cash in an envelope and mail it back, and then like 3 weeks later, that it would arrive on their doorstep.
That's amazing, dude.
Bygone times,
man.
Let's rewind a little before we get too deep into the whiskey, which we definitely want to talk about because there's some sitting right here on the table. You have a bar and a restaurant as well.
Correct.
And that kind of led you to this. How did that?
Yeah,
so you have Manifesto, which is your bar.
Yeah, I mean, at my core, I'm a bartender, and that's how I got into all of this. And that's how I started. I opened a bar called Manifesto in 2009. And Manifesto was heavily influenced by Milk and Honey and PDT and, you know, the speakeasy style craft cocktail bars that popped up around that time. And I wanted to bring that to Kansas City because I was just in love with the concept. I was in love with the drinks. So I found a spot in the basement of about a 94-year-old hotel at the time. A beautiful old building in downtown Kansas City that was it's pretty sparse back then, like downtown KC. It's come a long way since then, but really inexpensive. And I got this little, like, 800-square-foot basement bar with an entrance in the alley in the back of the building. So it kind of fit really well and very naturally into that concept.
Awesome.
So we had the, a call button at the back door and no sign, and it was very discreet and everything. And we were doing high-end craft cocktails. About a year later, we were really successful, and we expanded to open a restaurant on the first floor of the building. At that point, I wanted to learn more about the history of the building and everything. I partnered with Chef Howard Hanna to do this beautiful restaurant, and we decided to name it after what the building was. And the building had been, decades ago, a hotel, and it was called the Rieger Hotel. And so we knew we wanted to call the restaurant the Rieger. But I wanted to know more about the Rieger name, and in digging around, trying to find as much information as possible, even in, you know, just going to City Hall and digging up old records, I discovered that the Rieger family had a distillery prior to the hotel, and that was the connection.
So they got pushed out of business by the Noble Experiment.
Absolutely.
And then they went into the hotel business.
Well, they actually opened the hotel about 5 years before Prohibition. So the distillery was really rocking and rolling and doing great. And the founder's son then built the hotel in 1915. And then in 1919, Prohibition was voted in, and the Volstead was enacted in 1920. And it put the distillery out of business, and they sold the hotel by 1926 and got out of it entirely.
Wow.
Man.
So you
wouldn't really think, do you think of Kansas City? We think about, like, barbecue and blues and, like, Boulevard Brewery. That's what I've always known about it.
I love that Boulevard Brewery.
And the Royals. Well, I'm from Oklahoma, man. Yeah. That stuff's everywhere.
It's awesome.
Boulevard Wheat Beer, of course. And it's a great distiller. I mean, like,
barbecue and blues just
jazz
automatically equals whiskey to me, though. So, like,
exactly.
I think about whiskey when I think about that part of the country.
Yeah, man. It's crazy to hear, like, that, you know, like, even like you were saying, man, there was this rich history of stuff that we're all really psyched about, like this historical account for, like, this crazy distillery that no one knew about.
Right.
And this awesome hotel that was put out by the family. And, like, I've only ever thought of, like, the Kansas City Chiefs and the Royals and, you know,
right.
Like, and barbecue.
It's a new era.
It's crazy.
But I'm proud of our barbecue heritage as well. We talked about that earlier.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that we're a barbecue town. I take great pride in it.
Do you do barbecue at your restaurant?
Well, we're not really a barbecue restaurant. I wouldn't say that. But we, you know, one thing that Howard does, my business partner and the chef, he's really great about trying to identify Midwestern cuisine. You know,
sure.
We're not trying to be a French restaurant. We're not an Italian restaurant. We're not, you know, pigeonholed into any category like that. We are a Midwestern regional restaurant, and we try to showcase local flavors and styles and techniques and all that. So he does a lot of smoking, and he, like, for one thing he does, for example, is really cool. We've got barbecue rabbit wings on the menu. We're not
rabbits have wings.
Well, okay, so they're like chicken wings. Think of it. It tastes like chicken, too. But, yeah, like barbecue rabbit. He uses rabbit in a lot of dishes, too. So it's very, it's interesting, but it's not over the top. It's like, it's just very true to KC.
That's awesome.
Also, Kansas City, like we've said before, it's a blues town. It's a very musical town. Do you ever, like, do you ever go over to Branson and, like, poach some of the old-timers to come croon at your bar?
No, that is a great idea, though.
That would be too.
man, I haven't been
like a Moon River, like
Branson. That's something. Man, they need to, like, just turn Branson into like a second Las Vegas. I think.
It's like the Christian Las Vegas.
No, we have a great music scene in KC, and I'm a big supporter of a lot of local bands. In fact, we're getting ready to do a festival here in about 3 weeks called Paris of the Plains Cocktail Festival. We're in our fifth year.
Yep.
And it's about 4 days of, think like Tales of the Cocktail or like that type of thing, but with a Kansas City spin, and music is a very big part of it. So cool. We have at all of our events, we're showcasing local bands and local music and incorporating that into it.
That's awesome, man.
It's amazing. What are the dates on that?
August 26th through the 29th.
And how are you involved?
I'm one of the founders. Myself and Doug Frost started a competition in Kansas City called the Greater Kansas City Bartending Competition about 10 years ago. And that just morphed into a multi-day festival. It started out as one day, and now it's multiple days, and we've got like every bartender in town just, has kind of teamed together to make this thing happen.
That's awesome. And we were talking about this before the show, you and I were, about like the kind of evolution of the bar community in Kansas City and how you'd started the Kansas City Bartender Association, and then that eventually that
blossomed into the USBG chapter.
Yeah. And how you have like a really strong
It's
community.
Amazing. I think we have one of the best, most tight-knit communities. And I'm sure you'd hear that from anywhere in the country. Everyone has a lot of local civic pride. But, I think we have a tremendous community of bartenders that look out for each other and help each other and learn from each other and support all the other restaurants. We all want more. You know what I mean? It's one of those things about Kansas City. We're a vibrant city with a lot going on, but there's so much room to grow as well. So I think kind of helping each other out and always welcoming more people into the fold, welcoming more bars into the fold. We don't really look at it as competition. It's we're helping each other out.
Yeah, the high tide raises all boats.
Right.
Yeah. Cool, man. All right. Well, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, let's get into this whiskey, man.
Yeah,
it's just
I'm ready.
It's just staring at
my
us.
My mouth is watering.
Good God. All right. We'll be back in just a moment with Ryan Mabey.
Yeah. Music for this commercial break is brought to you by Citizens Rise, and this track is called Bad Citizen.
All right, last week during the break, we got a chance to talk about a new sponsor.
Cloud Ride.
Sylvia, you've never vaped any.
Never in my life.
Yeah.
I'm about to.
Yeah. So last week we talked about some of the flavors, and we found a vape pen, G-pen, right? It's called. So we're going to try out one of the flavors today. And I didn't realize this. Okay, so I think I called it oil last week on the show.
No, it's juice.
But apparently that's, it's juice. It's like e-juice. Vape juice. E-liquid. And apparently, oil is, specific to, marijuana.
Yeah.
Which
we're not going to talk about.
We're not going to. Well, I don't know if we can yet. We can. Whatever. So let's see. Which one are we trying today? All right. Let me look through these.
You got Smoky Oaky. You got Tobaccalope.
I'm going with the perfect pina. All right.
is that a pina colada or is that pineapple?
I think it's more.
It's a good question.
Well, let's figure it out. So, perfect pina. Perfectly ripe pineapples blended with orange, tangerine, and vanilla shisha will whisk you away. Pineapple whisk.
Whisk you away.
I'm doing it.
You're doing it. It's lit up. I see
we
it.
Had to go on the internet to find out how to use one of these things.
A YouTube video on how to fill the thing and make it work.
I've never done either.
It's pineapple and citrus.
Pass the duchy.
Okay, hold that. Okay, here's what you want to do. Hold that thing down. It's going to turn blue. And then give it some puffs. Yeah. You doing it right? Did I smoke it all? Did I vape it all?
Oh, no, there it is.
There you go. Hey, you got it. What do you think, man?
It's like inhaling the beach.
I was thinking the same thing.
Ryan, you willing to give this a try?
I am. I'm having really weird flashbacks right now of my parents' basement in 1992. What do I do here?
Hold down the button until the light.
Button on the side.
Oh, that one?
Yeah.
Yeah, see? Everything turns blue.
All right. Puff. Oh, you're hitting it better than me.
Oh, man. Yeah.
He's a pro.
Dude, this studio is...
It smells great in here.
Yeah, it's pineapple. Man?
So the whole thing with this company, Ryan, is that it is... They decided to kind of elevate the vape juice game. So they have all these flavor combinations are created by James Beard, award-winning chef. And the ones we have in here... Actually, there's we had six of them, but one of them went missing. It's, you know... Over a week of them just hanging out in the studio, you know, somebody pilfered. But so they have actually more flavors than these. These are actually a lot of these. Like there's Smoky Oaky, Perfect Pina, Moya. There's this is kind of like the beach trip.
Yeah,
like
it's like
the cocktail for your lungs, right?
It's like breathing pineapple upside down cake while at the beach, which already smells like coconuts and pineapple.
Yeah, man.
I'm feeling whisked away.
Hey, we're at the beach right now.
We sure are.
Cloudy Brooklyn afternoon.
Yeah, man. Well, it's cloud ride. We're riding the cloud, man. So this stuff is made in USA, 100% made in USA. And if you want to try this out, if you do indeed vape and not smoke cigarettes, which is good for you, you can use the code word SPEAK to get 20% off of your order. And you can check it out at cloudridevapor.com. All right, so we're going to try another one of these flavors next week.
Yes.
So tune in for that.
Indeed.
Oh, man, we are back.
Yeah, we are.
You're listening to Speakeasy, and in the studio today, we have Ryan Mabey, Rigger Distillery in Kansas City, Missouri. Also, a bar, a restaurant, USBG member. Like,
yeah.
This guy's all over the place.
The restaurant's attached to what used to be the Rigger Hotel. It's not a hotel anymore?
No, it's no longer a hotel. It's residential.
People live above your bar. That's awesome.
Well, okay, so it's technically residential, but so Eric Hosmer, the first baseman for the Kansas City Royals, lived up there last year, the year that the Royals won the World Series,
nice.
Which was great because he would be at Manifesto. Like, whenever they had a homestand, he would be in Manifesto 3-4 nights a week.
That's awesome.
It was awesome. But he didn't live there this year, and so the owner of the building
Is it one residence?
It's one massive residence. I mean, like... 3,000 square feet on one floor and 2,000 square feet on another that's all connected with a rooftop deck that's just stunning.
So wait, this was a hotel and then they broke down all the walls to make it like a big loft?
Like back in 2000, someone bought the building and put $5 million into it and just gutted it and made it beautiful. And it was their private residence. But then he moved out a few years ago and now it's more like an Airbnb type thing. So it's not really a hotel, but it's also not a hotel. You can stay there.
I can't even imagine what that costs to rent.
It's over a grand a night. I know that.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
A night?
Jesus Christ.
Okay, well, while we were on the break in vaping, I got a little high, frankly. But I also poured some of this beautiful whiskey. The Rieger's Kansas City Whiskey says right on the bottle, Kansas City Whiskey. I've definitely never seen that before. And you discovered some things about this distillery that you mm-hmm. decided to resurrect, and those things that you discovered are in this bottle. So you're going to talk about that, right?
Yeah. So the recipe for the whiskey, here's what we did. First off, it's a blended whiskey that we sourced multiple barrels from, like so many startup brands do. Because one thing, we have a functional distillery. We have two stills, but we didn't want to release a young product. We didn't want to release an underage, immature whiskey. So we started out by sourcing barrels, and the blend here is really unique. We've got a blend, the youngest part being 4-year-old bourbon. We have some 5-year-old straight rye in there and 9-year-old corn whiskey. Corn whiskey is 99% corn, 1% malt, and it's aged in second use bourbon barrels. Really, really cool. But I think the most interesting aspect of it is when I was researching the history of American whiskey dating back to the time period when J. Rieger & Co. was founded, back then, there was very little regulation like we have today. And also, like straight bourbon, straight rye, that's 4, 5, 6 years old, 8, 10, Pappy Van Winkle, that kind of stuff just didn't exist. People didn't drink it. It was mostly a lot younger. It was also, a lot of it was rectified. What that meant was that they were adding all kinds of weird shit into the whiskey that, some good, some bad.
Right.
But one of the ingredients, if you look at the TTB Beverage Alcohol Manual, I wouldn't recommend it. It's pretty dry reading, but there's like in fine print at the very end of it is two sentences on how you can legally add up to 2.5% sherry and still call it American whiskey. And when I read that, when I heard that, I was with Dave Pickerel, who is the former master distiller at Four Roses.
Yep.
Or I'm sorry, not Four Roses, Maker's Mark. And he's a kind of a consulting partner on our distillery. And I was just blown away. I'm like, I'm just absolutely in love with this idea. And my first question was, why is this rule here? Why is this law here? And my second question was, is anybody else doing it? And the answer was, in American whiskey, no. Nobody's doing that at all. And the reason that law is there is because it was allowed back in that time period when J. Rieger & Co. was founded. And so I was immediately just in love with the idea of doing this. And so,
fuck yeah, whiskey and sherry?
Absolutely.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that.
You know, I was already a big fan of sherry just from the cocktail world, like using it in cocktails. And I had a previous life more connected to the wine world. And so I was in love with the idea of doing that. And so I went to Jerez with Steve Olson, who is one of the best, you know, sherry experts in the world.
The sherry mind, yes.
Yeah. And
AKA wine geek.
Yep. And we ran around Jerez to the different bodegas and started talking to them about, you know, sourcing different sherries for this project, and also we're trying to work out a business relationship with them. And we ended up landing on a 15-year-old Oloroso sherry from Williams & Humbert. And it constitutes less than 2% of the blend, but it's really profound
when you taste it.
Yeah. The other cool thing is when we sent the recipe to the TTB and we finally got it dialed in, we sent the recipe to the TTB, and I was all stoked about it and everything, and they approved it, but they were really confused. They were like, "You can do this, but this doesn't fit into any current category of American whiskey, not even blended whiskey. It doesn't qualify
because
for blended whiskey.
Because you have three different whiskeys plus the sherry now.
Right. And so they said the only thing you can call it is whiskey, like just plain whiskey, you know? And I was okay with that because I believed what was in the bottle. But I said, well, what if we were to call it Kansas City whiskey? Because we're reviving a distillery that was around during that time period when this was more common, that died with Prohibition. And also, nobody else in the country is doing this. So can we call it Kansas City whiskey as a style, as a category?
Like a designation of its own.
Right. And kind of much to our surprise, they said yes. They agreed to let us do it.
That's awesome, man.
And there it is right on the bottle.
There it is.
Kansas City whiskey, Rieger's.
Dude, it's...
And I think it's important to at least fine line the idea, because we're on the radio and maybe people aren't paying enough attention, but this is not a whiskey that's finished in a sherry cask.
This
is whiskey finished with sherry up to 2.5%.
We literally receive the sherry in bottles. In bottles, in a canister, and we have to pop open the cans, and have to pop open the canisters and pull out the bottle and the foil and the cork, and we literally dump the bottles into the blending tank.
You wouldn't even say finished with sherry, because that's even confusing.
Right.
No, we say sherry finish. Not it's finished sherry. With sherry. It's just it's whiskey and sherry.
It's
together.
A blend, yeah. And the sherry is a very, very small part of it, but it's an important part.
You said you can go up to 2.5, but you're doing less than 2.
You can go up to 2.5, right. But ours is just a little bit under 2. We just, you know, just for the flavor profile that we were going for. Because it's there, but it's not overpowering. Mm. And I also wouldn't say that it's necessarily sweet. That's one thing that a lot of people will say, well, does that make it really sweet? Not really. I mean, it's 92 proof. you know, it's 46% ABV, so it's got some kick to it, but it's just got that, like, richness in the center of the palate.
Yeah, and it's not, like, Oloroso Sherry sweet anyway. I mean, right. Sherry has,
a nuttiness of...
Yeah, but it also has a connotation of being thought of as sweet because people think of cooking sherry.
Yeah, I think it's a misunderstood category. You know, you've got sherries out there that can run the gamut of like literally thick like syrup, like Pedro Ximénez, and then the really dry ones.
One of my favorite sherries is the Williams & Humbert 20-year-old Pedro Ximénez, which is like that thing is deep and dank, man. It'll that thing comes off your palate like a minute and a half later, and you go through like a total trip.
You know, it's really cool, though, and we experimented with different styles. We experimented with everything from Fino up to the PX like that. For our purposes, that it's kind of a medium-sweet 15-year-old Oloroso. That's what just worked the best. But imagine taking a different mash grain or mash bill of whiskey, like say you're making a malt whiskey, and you added a drier Amontillado to it. You could get really creative within that realm.
Sure. And I'm really also shocked at how... I didn't realize it was 92 proof until you said so.
Yeah.
I checked the bottle to make sure you weren't lying. Maybe.
Dude.
It really is soft and approachable on the palate. It's, you know, it's halfway to being a cocktail already.
Yeah.
Maybe a dash of bitters.
Yeah. Well, that's you and your bitters bar.
Hey, listen.
So this is awesome. So this was your first product that you produced.
That was, yeah.
And you still do. It's fantastic.
We featured it at 2 weeks' notice this past week.
Yeah.
Sure did.
Actually, there's a lot of bars around New York that currently have this whiskey in cocktails on the menu, and they're rocking with it. Like, Death & Co. is just selling the crap out of it, and so is PDT. They have a cocktail on the menu. I'm seeing it. We're starting to get some traction. I mean, we're relatively new here in New York, but I think we have some support from some good friends and great places, and it's getting some traction.
That's great.
Really cool. Awesome. Well, you know what? Let's talk about some of the other products you have, man. Like, you have a gin, and then you also have this other whiskey, and then an Amaro that you started making, a Cafe Amaro.
Yeah, so we do a vodka.
You do two, right? Two labels at least?
Two labels of...
Of the vodka?
No, there's just one vodka.
Okay.
The vodka is actually a mix of different neutral grain spirits. So it's corn, wheat, and potato. And we give it a single run through our copper still, the same one that we make whiskey on, just so we can give it a heads and tails cut and give it some body. So it's more of a full-flavored, full-bodied style vodka. The gin, I'm absolutely just enamored with it. And I can't take really any credit for it, but we were fortunate enough to bring on literally the world's best master distiller of gin. He's a legend. Tom Nickel. He worked for Tanqueray for 42 years, and he's responsible for making all of it. He developed Tanqueray No. 10 and Malacca, and he's just an absolute genius when it comes to that. And making gin is not easy. You know, there's a lot of subtlety and a lot of nuance to it. So having that kind of a resource is incredibly valuable. And we also wanted to do a gin. I think one thing with domestic gins, American gins, there's a tendency to get really far away from like classic London dry style. And the problem with that is, as a bartender, if the juniper is really dialed back and then there's a whole bunch of like flowers and other components, how well is that going to work in a classic cocktail, like say a Negroni or a Tom Collins or something like that, that's already like tried and true and proven.
Sure.
So we wanted to do a very traditional classic London dry style of gin, just to the best of our abilities, and Tom was the guy for that.
Amazing.
Yeah, man. You really did your Rieger search on that.
The puns. Oh, here come God. The puns. Okay, well, we have a second bottle sitting here on the table, which my interest is certainly piqued. You're producing now an Amaro.
Yeah, this has been a fun little experiment. Being kind of like a small distillery, small business, we have the ability to be real creative and, you know, try something and, you know, hopefully not fuck it up. But this is something I've wanted to do for a long time. I love coffee and I love Amaro, and I don't
Double
have...
Double buzz.
Right. I don't have a huge sweet tooth, so I like to drink, like, coffee or espresso and Amaro side by side, like, after a meal. And then I was like, why can't I just put these two together? So I started experimenting with making a coffee liqueur at Manifesto several years ago just for cocktails, and it slowly evolved into this bitter experiment. And so what we ended up with here is a Cafe Amaro, what we call Cafe Amaro. And the primary flavor is coffee, but you'll notice that it's got that botanical, herbal, bitter element on the back end. And it's been a really fun project. It's been real exciting. And we also got to partner with a local coffee roaster that selected the coffee beans and did the roast and made basically a large, giant batch of cold brew for us. And then we took the cold brew and mixed it with the alcohol that was macerating with all the spices and botanicals and all that, blended those two together, and then put it in used whiskey barrels.
Man, it's roasty, but it's...
It also smells like very vegetal and green.
Yeah, I was going to say it's like roasty, but it's got like delicate parts to it. It's like, and I don't even drink coffee, man. This is actually making me feel really good. It's like I've missed coffee. I can't handle it.
There's
anymore.
Definitely caffeine in it, too. I have no idea how much. I don't even know how to figure that out. But I can
get
tell
Dave
you.
Arnold on the scene.
But I mean, it's a cold brew, and so there's definitely some caffeine in there.
Well, I'm going to be jacked.
I mean, I'm in love with it. It's so different than any other coffee product that's on back bars that are all just cloyingly sweet. I'm not going to name any names.
Yeah, this is dry as fuck.
This is dry coffee.
But it's coffee.
But
it's
coffee.
It's both. It's
what's
crazy.
The availability on this? Like, what's the...
Okay, so, right, so, it's brand so new, you guys are actually one of the very first to try this. This bottle,
yeah.
I've been in town for 4 days, and before I came out here, I pulled enough out of the barrel just to make two bottles, and I left one at home so that I can start working on cocktail recipe development, and I brought one here with me to share with my friends.
And we're finishing the bottle right now.
Right,
we're at the bottom.
Thanks for saving that, man.
Yeah.
Dude, you have no idea how hard it has been. The last 4 days I've been carrying
light.
I have been carrying it with me all over New York. Souther can attest.
Yeah,
on Sunday I had it at Amore Amargo. And this is the only bottle. I'm like, I've got to make sure I have enough for Wednesday afternoon.
Awesome, dude.
So worked out
thanks
just
for
right.
that, man. That's awesome. Cheers. Yeah. So, yeah, this is really cool. Dude, like I said, I don't drink coffee. I'm definitely finishing this. So let's talk about Left 4 Dead.
Yeah, Left 4 Dead. So Left 4 Dead
such
is
a cool idea.
Left 4 Dead, you know, so we collaborate with a local coffee roaster for this, and much in the same vein, we wanted to collaborate with a local brewery in KC, Boulevard Brewing Company, you mentioned earlier. They have just blown up. I mean, they've been around since 1989. They 3 years ago or so, they got bought by Duvel Morcat out of Belgium, and they're continuing to just grow and do amazing things. But one thing that I learned recently, so our head distiller, Nathan Perry, he worked at Boulevard for a lot of years, and he was in their quality control department. He has a chemistry background, so he knew the inner workings of that process and that company. And he was telling us about how they dump tens of thousands of gallons of beer down the drain every year.
What?
Yes. I know. That was my reaction exactly. And we were just all mortified. Like, why would they do that? But, you know, they had good reason for it. It was either test brews, you know, that they were just working on ideas, or they had really strict standards when it comes to shipping. Like, if it at any point gets out of the temperature range, they don't even take a chance sending it on to the right distributor. They just bring it back. So whatever the case may be, whenever they pour that whiskey down or the beer down the drain, they've already spent a ton of money, you know, making it, bottling it, all that. But then in addition to that, they have to pay the federal excise taxes on the alcohol. And then on top of that, they have to pay a disposal fee to the city of Kansas City for pouring all that stuff into the sewage system. Wow. So we worked out a deal with them where we said, why don't you just give it to us? Why don't you just give us your beer that you don't want, transfer it to us, so we'll take the taxes, and then we will just put it in our still, and we'll distill it. And we don't know how it's going to turn out, but...
But there's no disposal cost either.
No, so they save money. They're saving money on the taxes and the disposal. And we're saving money because they're just giving it to us. And right, we don't have, you know, the whiskeys that we're doing from grain. And so the fermentation's already done. The biggest pain in the ass about it is that we're getting bottles. You know, we're getting like a pallet of cases that's bottled. Our staff... we have a very small team. We've got three employees at the distillery. Whenever we get this pallet of like beer in, they have to pop open all the bottles and dump it into a tank. You know,
like you get volunteer night happening.
Right. Yeah, seriously.
round up the regulars from Manifesto.
Yeah, so we're taking that leftover beer from Boulevard, and we're just putting in the still and distilling it. That's it.
That beer that would be Left 4 Dead.
Right.
And that's the vodka.
Yeah, it's not vodka because it's.
Well, what are we calling it?
Legally, you have to call it a specialty distilled spirit. The closest way I can describe it would be white whiskey. Some people will get angry with me calling it white whiskey, but that's the closest thing that you can associate it with because it mostly comes from grain. The reason you can't label it like whiskey is because there are other ingredients in it, like hops.
Sure, of course.
Right, but it's a grain for the most part. So it's more or less, it comes off like whiskey and we're not really doing any aging. We have like one barrel aging right now. We might do something with later, but the cool thing is what I think is really awesome about it is that it's pure, you know, it's just the pure spirit extract from the beer and it's right off the still. We bottle it at 89 proof and it tastes like it's like the essence of the beer and they're all so different. So like batch number one was made from unfiltered wheat beer. And batch number two was made from Imperial Stout. And the difference, even though it was bottled at the same proof, and we didn't do anything different, the difference is night and day. So it's kind of a nerdy educational moment, you know, to like see the connection between beer and whiskey or spirit.
It's like the beer schnapps you get in
exactly
all over the country, all over Europe. So then where is this stuff going? Is it staying local? Is there big enough production to get it out there? Or are you guys just doing beer and shot specials with Boulevard Beer?
So we're kind of limited to whatever they give us.
Sure.
Right? So far, we've distilled like the first 10 batches. And they range between 350 bottles. And we're doing all these in 375s, half bottles. Mm-hmm. We're getting anywhere from 350 bottles up to maybe 1,000, which is not a lot.
Right.
So most of it's staying local because of the local pride in Boulevard and support for Boulevard. People are going crazy for it. But we're getting some out to like Omaha.
Can you send like a Pony Express with that shit out to Brooklyn?
I might be able to hook you up. That would be cool, actually.
right here to
Harry. That'd be our
Radio
first
Network.
Pony Express experiment of 2016.
That'd be awesome, man. And it's such a great idea, man. Because like you said, you know, like it's there.
Well, and this is the nature of, you know, the word you used before. This is a community building. Effort, you know, you've got those guys doing their thing, you're doing your thing, let's do our thing together in a way that makes that doing the thing
why not
better.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
Well, dude,
good on you for that.
I have to say it's been a pleasure having you on the show. I don't want to carry this on too much longer because I know you got to catch a flight.
No worries. You
already changed your flight to be on the show today, which I really appreciate, man. But yeah, check out so tell us the website.
Yeah, go to jriegerco.com and that's jriegerco.com. We also have a new website going up for the Rieger, the restaurant. We've been rebuilding it for a while, and that's theriegerkc.com. So there's obviously a familial connection there. But yeah, and then we got PopFest coming up in a few weeks in KC too. And I would just say, you know, if you haven't been to KC, you know, what are you waiting for?
PopFest, yeah. Paris of the Plains. What are the dates again?
The 26th through the 29th of this month.
Right on.
Nice. Well, cool, man. Ryan, maybe can't thank you enough for being on the show today. Thanks for indulging us with your whiskey and the Cafe Amaro. Really cool stuff, man. And really happy that from one, you know, Great Plains person to the next, you know, it's like I really appreciate what's happening in Kansas City and what you've been doing, man.
Thank you. I really appreciate
the community
that
you're building in there is amazing.
Thank you.
So join us next week when we'll have Chris Lauder on the air all the way from Seoul, South Korea. He's the head bartender at Charles H. inside of the new Seoul, South Korea Four Seasons Hotel.
Good guy.
I love the name of that bar, by the way.
Charles H. The name. Named after Charles H. Baker. He's going to teach us about MVP Champ. Stay tuned to hear about that.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, that's it for this week. Check out Heritage Radio Network for many more programs like this. Until then, cheers, guys.
Guys,
cheers.
Thank you.
Ding. So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some in the air.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.